Chapter 40. I shall go to zero, I judge. Ears ever, Mark. Clemens had doubts as to the quality of the Bermuda papers, and with some reason. They did not represent him at his best. Nevertheless, they were pleasantly entertaining, and Howells expressed full approval of them for Atlantic use. The author remained troubled. To W.D. Howells, in Boston. Elmira, July 4, 1877. My dear Howells, it is splendid of you to say those pleasant things. But I am still plagued with doubts about parts 1 and 2. If you have any, don't print. If otherwise, please make some cold villain like Lathrop Red, and pass sentence on them. Mind, I thought they were good. At first it was the second reading that accomplished its hellish purpose on me. Put them up for a new verdict. Part 4 has lain in my pigeonhole a good while, and when I put it there I had a Christian's confidence in 4 aces in it, and you can be sure it will skip toward Connecticut tomorrow before any fatal fresh reading makes me draw my bet. I've piled up 151 MS pages on my comedy. The first, second and fourth acts are done, and done to my satisfaction too. Tomorrow and next day we'll finish the third act and the play. I have not written less than 30 pages any day since I began. Never had so much fun over anything in my life, never such consuming interest and delight. But Lord bless you, the second reading will fetch it. And just think. I had Sol Smith Russell in my mind's eye for the old detective's part, and hang it, he has gone off pottering with Oliver Optic, or else the papers lie. I read everything about the president's doings there with exultation. I wish that old ass of a private secretary hadn't taken me for George Francis Train. If ignorance were a means of grace, I wouldn't trade that gorilla's chances for the Archbishop of Canterbury's. I shall call on the president again, by and by. I shall go in my war paint. And if I am obstructed, the nation will have the unusual spectacle of a private secretary with a pen over one ear, atomic over the other. I read the entire Atlantic this time. Wonderful number. Mrs. Rose Terry Cook's story was a 10 strike. I wish she would write 12 old-time New England tales a year. Good times to you all. Mind if you don't run here for a few days, you will go to hence without having had a fair glimpse of heaven. Mark. The play, Us In, that had done little enough in Washington, was that summer given another trial by Augustin Daly, at the Fifth Avenue Theater, New York, with a fine company. Clemens had undertaken to doctor the play, and it would seem to have had an enthusiastic reception on the opening night. But it was a summer audience, unspoiled by many attractions. H. Sin was never a success in the New York season, never a moneymaker on the road. The reference in the first paragraph of the letter that follows is to the Bermuda chapters which Mark Twain was publishing simultaneously in England and America. Elmira, August 3, 1877. My dear Howells, I have mailed one set of the slips to London, and told Bentley you would print September 15, in October Atlantic, and he must not print earlier in Temple Bar. Have I got the dates and things right? I am powerful glad to see that number 1 reads a nation sight better in print than it did in MS. I told Bentley we'd send him the slips, each time, 6 weeks before day of publication. We can do that, can't we? 2 months ahead would be still better, I suppose, but I don't know. Us In went a-booming at the Fifth Avenue. The reception of Colonel Sellers was calm compared to it. The criticisms were just. The criticisms of the great New York dailies are always just, intelligent, and square and honest, notwithstanding, by a blunder which nobody was seriously to blame for, I was made to say exactly the opposite of this in a newspaper some time ago. Never said it at all, and moreover I never thought it. I could not publicly correct it before the play appeared in New York, because that would look as if I had really said that thing, and then was moved by fears for my pocket, and my reputation to take it back. But I can correct it now, and shall do it, for now my motives cannot be impugned. When I began this letter, it had not occurred to me to use you in this connection, but it occurs to me now. Your opinion and mine, uttered a year ago, and repeated more than once since, that the candor and ability of the New York critics were beyond question, is a matter which makes it proper enough that I should speak through you at this time. Therefore, if you will print this paragraph somewhere, it may remove the impression that I say unjust things which I do not think, merely for the pleasure of talking. There, now, can't you say, in a letter to Mr. Howells of the Atlantic Monthly, Mark Twain describes the reception of the new comedy Alice in, apostrophe and then goes on to say, etc., beginning at the star with the words, the criticisms were just. Mrs. Clemens says, don't ask that of Mr. Howells, it will be disagreeable to him. I hadn't thought of it, but I will bet 2-1 on the correctness of her instinct. We shall see. Will you cut that paragraph out of this letter, and proceed it with the remarks suggested, or with better ones, and send it to the Globe or some other paper? You can't do me a bigger favor, and yet if it is in the least disagreeable, you mustn't think of it. But let me know, right away, for I want to correct this thing before it grows stale again. I explained myself to only one critic, the World, the consequence was a noble notice of the play. This one called on me, else I shouldn't have explained myself to him. I have been putting in a deal of hard work on that play in New York, but it is full of incurable defects. My old Plunkett family seemed wonderfully coarse and vulgar on the stage, but it was because they were played in such an outrageously and inexcusably coarse way. The Chinaman is killingly funny. I don't know when I have enjoyed anything as much as I did him. The people say there isn't enough of him in the piece. That's a triumph, there'll never be any more of him in it. John Brougham said, read the list of things which the critics have condemned in the piece, and you have unassailable proofs that the play contains all the requirements of success and a long life. That is true. Nearly every time the audience roared, I knew it was over something that would be condemned in the morning, justly, too, but must be left in, for low comedies are written for the drawing room, the kitchen and the stable, and if you cut out the kitchen and the stable, the drawing room can't support the play by itself. There was as much money in the house the first 2 nights as in the first 10 of Sellers. Haven't heard from the third, I came away. Ears ever, Mark. In a former letter we have seen how Mark Twain, working on a story that was to stand as an example of his best work, and become one of his surest claims to immortality, The Adventures of Huckleberry Finn, displayed little enthusiasm in his undertaking. In the following letter, which relates the conclusion of his detective comedy, we find him at the other extreme, on very tiptoe with enthusiasm over something wholly without literary value or dramatic possibility. One of the hallmarks of genius is the inability to discriminate as to the value of its output. Iman Wheeler, amateur detective, was a dreary, absurd, impossible performance, as wild and unconvincing in incident and dialogue as anything out of an asylum could well be. The title which he first chose for it, Balaam's Ass, was properly in keeping with the general scheme. Yet Mark Twain, still warm with the creative fever, had the fullest faith in it as a work of art and a winner of fortune. It would never see the light of production, of course. We shall see presently that the distinguished playwright, Dion Boucicault, good-naturedly complimented it as being better than H.I.'s Inn. One must wonder what that skilled artist really thought, and how he could do even this violence to his conscience. To W.D. Howells, in Boston. Elmira, Wednesday, P.M.M. 1877, My dear Howells, it's finished. I was misled by hurried mispaging. There were 10 pages of notes, and over 300 pages of MS, when the play was done. Did it in 42 hours, by the clock, 40 pages of the Atlantic, but then of course it's very at. Those are the figures, but I don't believe them myself, because the thing's impossible. But let that pass. All day long, and every day, since I finished in the rough, I have been diligently altering, amending, rewriting, cutting down. I finished finally today. Can't think of anything else in the way of an improvement. I thought I would stick to it, while the interest was hot, and I am mighty glad I did. A week from now it will be frozen, then revising would be drudgery. You see, I learned something from the fatal blunder of putting H's in aside before it was finished. She's all right now. She reads in 2 hours and 20 minutes, and will play not longer than 2, 3, 4 hours. 19 characters. 3 acts. I bunched 2 into 1. Tomorrow I will draw up an exhaustive synopsis, to insert in the printed title page for copywriting, and then on Friday or Saturday I go to New York, to remain a week or 10 days, and lay for an actor. Wish you could run down there, and have a holiday. T'won't be fun. My wife won't have alum's ass. Therefore I call the piece Apn Simon Wheeler, the amateur detective. Here's Mark. To W.D. Howells, in Boston. Elmira, August 29, 1877. My dear Howells, just got your letter last night. No, darn that article, one of the Bermuda chapters. It made me cry, when I read it in proof, it was so oppressively and ostentatiously poor. Skim your eye over it again, and you will think as I do. If Isaac and the prophets of Baal can be doctored gently and made permissible, it will redeem the thing. But if it can't, let's burn all of the articles except the tail end of it, and use that as an introduction to the next article as I suggested in my letter to you of day before yesterday. I had this proof from Cambridge before yours came. Bousicult says my new play is ever so much better than H. Sin. Says the amateur detective is a bully character too. An actor is jawing over the play in New York, to see if the old detective is suited to his abilities. Haven't heard from him yet. If you've got that paragraph by you yet, and if in your judgment it would be good to publish it, and if you absolutely would not mind doing it, then I think I'd like to have you do it or else put some other words in my mouth, that will be properer, and publish them. But mind, don't think of it for a moment, if it is distasteful, and doubtless it is. I value your judgment more than my own, as to the wisdom of saying anything at all in this matter. To say nothing leaves me in an injurious position, and yet maybe I might do better to speak to the men themselves, when I go to New York. This was my latest idea, and it looked wise. We expect to leave here for home September 4, reaching there the 8th, but we may be delayed a week. Curious thing. I read passages from my play, and a full synopsis, to Bousicault, who was rewriting a play, which he wrote and laid aside 3 or 4 years ago. My detective is about that age, you know. Then he read a passage from his play, where a real detective does some things, that are as idiotic as some of my old Wheeler's performances. Showed me the passages, and behold, his man's name is Wheeler. However, his Wheeler is not a prominent character, so we'll not alter the names. My Wheeler's name is taken from the old Jumping Frog sketch. I am rereading Tickner's diary, and am charmed with it, though I still say he refers to too many good things, when he could just as well have told them. Think of the man traveling 8 days in convoy, and familiar intercourse with a band of outlaws through the mountain fastnesses of Spain, he the fourth stranger they had encountered in 30 years, and compressing this priceless experience into a single colorless paragraph of his diary. They spun yarns to this unworthy devil too. I wrote you a very long letter a day or two ago, but Susie Crane wanted to make a copy of it to keep, so it is not gone yet. It may go today, possibly. We unite in warm regards to you and yours. Yours ever, Mark. The Tickner referred to in a former letter was Professor George Tickner, of Harvard College, a history writer of distinction. On the margin of the diary Mark Twain once wrote, Tickner is a millet, who makes all men fall in love with him. and that colon millet was the cause of lovable qualities in people, and then he admired and loved those persons for the very qualities which he, without knowing it, had created in them. Perhaps it would be strictly truer of these two men to say that they bore within them the divine something in whose presence the evil in people fled away and hid itself, while all that was good in them came spontaneously forward out of the forgotten walls and comers in their systems, where it was accustomed to hide. It is Frank Millet, the artist, he is speaking of, a knightly soul whom all the Clemens household loved, and who would one day meet his knightly end with those other brave men that found death together when the Titanic went down. The Clemens family was still at Quarry Farm at the end of August, and one afternoon there occurred a startling incident which Mark Twain thought worth setting down in practically duplicate letters to Howells and to Dr. John Brown. It may be of interest to the reader to know that John T. Lewis, the colored man mentioned, lived to a good old age, a pensioner of the Clemens family, and, in the course of time, of H.H. Rogers. Howells' letter follows. It is the very long letter referred to in the foregoing. To W.D. Howells and wife, in Boston. Elmira, August 25, 77. My dear Howellses, I thought I ought to make a sort of record of it for further reference. The pleasantest way to do that would be to write it to somebody, but that somebody would let it leak into print, and that we wish to avoid. The Howellses would be safe, so let us tell the Howellses about it. Day before yesterday was a fine summer day away up here on the summit. Aunt Marsh and Cousin May Marsh were here visiting Susie Crane and Livy at our farmhouse. By and by Mother Langdon came up the hill in the high carriage with Nora the nurse, and little Jervis, Charlie Langdon's little boy, Timothy the coachman driving. Behind these came Charlie's wife and little girl in the buggy, with the new, young, spry, gray horse, a high dash stepper. Theodore Crane arrived a little later. The bay and Susie were on hand with their nurse, Rosa. I was on hand too. Susie Crane's trio of colored servants, ditto these being Josie, housemaid, Auntie Cord, cook, aged 62, turbaned, very tall, very broad, very fine every way, see her portrait in, true story just as I heard. Gutenberg edition. End of chapter.